This episode, we welcome Grindhouse radio personality Brimstone. Brim has been a child actor appearing on the beloved children's show Sesame Street, a former pro wrestler who has had a comic book character modeled after him, developer of an award-winning hot sauce, and a renowned radio personality on the New York City area radio scene. Always a shapeshifter, we will look at how Brimstone has ultimately discovered his true personality, followed his heart and his dreams, and always delivered through his personal self-belief and confidence in his true identity. Join us as we look at how never giving up on yourself leads to discovering your superhero identity on this episode of The Like Inside. Thank you for taking a moment to tune into this week's episode of The Light Inside. Join us on the adventures, the tales, and the search for truths as we explore the people, the stories that guide us to the light inside. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Light Inside and visit us at thelightinside.us. Hi, Brimstone. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, Jeff, first and foremost, I am so happy to be here with you on The Light Inside, man. It is, I've heard nothing but good things about you. I listened to some of the episodes. You're fantastic. So it's an honor and a privilege to be here, brother.
Thank you, my friend. It's an honor and privilege to have you here today. And I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. All right. Well, let's jump in.
I follow your lead.
What I typically do is just jump into conversational format. I've got some pointed things along here, but I'm ready to dodge and weave wherever you go with it. So let your mind unroll. Start off, how do you pronounce your real surname? Just for my curiosity.
My real last name is Kaczmarowski.
Yeah.
Kaczmarowski, yeah.
Kaczmarowski. Okay, I thought so. Is that, what's your descent? What's your family descent?
It's like a big mutt. On my father's side, it's like Polish, yeah. And I don't even remember what it is. And on my mother's side, it's Russian and German. Yeah, we're mutt.
Yeah, I was thinking you're probably like bordering Polish Czech. I've got a buddy named Talenko, and he's Polish Czech descent.
Oh, wow.
I was kind of looking at the spelling similar. His original family spelling is kind of convoluted by American mutt standards, and they come back and changed it up American mutt standards.
Yeah, mine was changed too.
I was kind of just feeling that vibe, just out of curiosity.
I think originally there was a Z in the name somewhere, and I think they took it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, census takers never liked those Zs for some reason. They always tend to drop them out. You know, that was that English pretentiousness in there somewhere. Yeah, those Brits, damn them.
That was like the one letter that they took out. My father was always saying, he goes, out of everything, he goes, all you took out was a Z. He's like, so many letters, is it 12, 13 letters in the name? It's like, you couldn't have shortened it to like K or something like that. But yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that was for my own thing.
Yeah. I mean, so like for a while before I was Brimstone, I mean, my stage name was Will K. We shortened it there. And yeah, what do you call it? Because Kaczmarowski, nobody's going to be able to say it or remember it.
And yeah.
I've been back and forth, and I know the people at IMDb. I do stuff with IMDb. And even that, it'll be such a bitch and a half to change, you know, the name where it comes up William Kaczmarowski instead of just Brimstone, because that's how everybody knows to me. You know what I mean? It's like very few people. I mean, everybody except for my wife and my kids call me Brim. You know what I mean? Like everybody. Yeah. So my whole crew, all my employees, everybody in the entertainment industry, there's like maybe five people in entertainment that actually call me Will. They refuse to call me Brim.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Which one of them is Michael Zapsik. Do you know Mike?
Yeah.
From Comic Book Men. So Mike and he, when we're doing professional things, he'll call me Brim. But you know, what do you call it? Or when we're on air, he'll call me Brim. But he'll never call me Brim, you know, person to person, which is fine. I don't care. But there's a couple of other people scattered that you may or may not know. I mean, from like Charles Martinet, yeah. What do you call it? Yeah. I don't know if you know Charles and Sean uh-huh. Schemmel and what do you call it? Like Richard Horvitz. I just spoke with all three of them yesterday. I mean, they all call me the Brimstone or Brim. It's funny because it's like, okay, it's so ingrained. That's who I am.
Yeah.
I find it very cool. And it makes it easier because let's be honest. With the amount of people that you see and you meet, especially in entertainment, you have to have an identity, and that's my identity. It's my stage name. And at the end of the day, what are you going to remember? Will or Brimstone? You know what I mean? I'll remember the Brim guy.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's the name stands out. You've got a definite brand there. You know, that's something we ought to talk a little bit about. Have you read The Alter Ego Effect book?
No.
By a guy named Todd Herman. He is actually like a professional sports training coach, mindset coach, and he since expanded out into like being a personal life coach and a leadership coach. He's worked with like national leaders and people all over the map. But basically his book is about creating that alter ego where we allow ourselves to kind of shift into a different mind frame, mm-hmm. To kind of stimulate,
right,
you know, where we're at and put us in our performance mode, so to speak.
Yeah.
We're reaching into our gut and our fire.
Very cool.
And then also as a branding element, it's a really interesting book. You should check that out sometime. I'll send you that link over.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is. You know, I kind of stumbled across him as a coach and was checking out what he was doing. And I was like, yeah, this guy seems like he's pretty solid. I'm going to dive in, and then discovered this book.
Oh, wow.
Just happened to pick it up about probably a month and a half ago. And I've stumbled my way through about three quarters of it, but it's a great book. And I've just been trying to juggle like four or five different books here lately, going through and picking parts out of them. So.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, One of my good friends from the industry, from the wrestling industry, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, if you know who Beefcake is.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So Beefcake gave me, he'd read and went through the book, The Secret. Have you ever read that?
Yeah.
So He gave me this book about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I still have not read it. Can I tell you?
Sure.
Like I had no time to sit and read the damn thing, and I've wanted to. And every time I go to sit down and do it, I've read other books in the meantime. Like usually I'll catch up on, you know, trying to read or getting involved in something, you know, when I'm touring during flights and so forth, I'm able to sit and read and catch up.
Sure.
But I keep forgetting that I have the damn book. It's sitting in my studio. It's in my office. And it's all underlined, like all the things he wants to make sure. Like,
yeah.
This and this and this. And I'm just like,
the cliff note version, right? Just skim through and pick the cliff notes. That's what I do a lot of times anyway. You know, I have at any given time, you know, 4 or 5 books around.
Yeah.
Our library, our personal library at home is just kind of sick. we're perpetual book collectors, and not only just fiction, nonfiction, yeah, improvement books, you know, everything all over the map, biography, autobiography.
Oh, wow.
And then that's not even mentioning our sick collection of cookbooks.
Yes. The cookbooks.
I think we have probably about 100, 150 cookbooks around the house.
Wow. So you guys are foodies.
Yeah, foodies. And we were restaurateurs for about 6 years. I was a self-made chef.
Oh, wow.
For those 6 years, executive chef, ran a little spot.
Very cool.
Did that for a while. So, yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. See, now you got to get that moving again while you're home.
Yeah. Well, right now it's kind of stagnant. You know, it's kind of hard to be a chef when nothing's open, right?
Yeah, right. So that's when you can really get the chopped stuff going.
Sure.
I have those 10-year-old jujubes, a couple of old stale French fries, and maybe a slice of bread. What can I make with it?
I don't know. I kind of feel like I've rode that horse as far as I want to ride it for now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a lot of that. I actually was scheduled to go up to Chicago and do an audition for Chopped.
Yeah.
We had a sister and brother-in-law lived up there. Now I have 2 daughters that live up there. But at the time, a sister and brother-in-law that lived up there.
Yeah.
And we were scheduling the trip to go up during an open interview. And one of those big kind of freak squall snowstorms come in, shut everything down.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I guess this is a sign that on this day, I'm not supposed to go up there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of early on in the planning for our restaurant. And then, you know, got swept into that whole live it lifestyle of you know, owning a restaurant and being a chef, and it just kind of went to the back burners. I have no time to go up there and do this now, so it got shelved.
Yeah,
You know, it's one of those things. It's probably one of the only things on my bucket list I didn't clear off by going through that whole hospitality adventure. You know, everything else I had set, I had done in some degree, but I didn't do that one thing. I don't regret it now. You know, I don't tend to live life by regrets and looking back and saying, well, shit, I should have done that. It's one of the things that didn't get bucket list crossed off. If I don't ever do it, I'm fine with it now. I've come to amends with all of that. You know, it's kind of like a chapter in my book I've set aside now.
Hey, look, but owning a restaurant is an absolute painstaking self-deprecating type of a job, because all you're doing is working. You have no social life. It's crazy. You have no opportunities to do anything but sit and work unless you're closed for a day. And the day that you're closed is now you got to take care of everything. You know what I mean?
We went about a 5-year stretch where it was from the house to the restaurant, running errands, back home, grab a quick nap. No breaks, no vacations. And
awful.
We ended up losing our building lease. We had a business partnership where there was a joint ownership in our building and they wanted to kind of separate things. Silent partner had been out of the picture for a good while, but they decided they wanted their interest and asset back out of the share.
Yeah.
You know, long story short, we tried to build out selling the building and restaurant as a unit and this acquiring a new owner, and ended up building was acquired by a church.
Wow.
So, you know, that shut us down. After 5 years of building things and getting levity and, you know, becoming pretty solvent.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I don't want to go back to square one, look for a new location, do another build out, try to, you know, manage getting staff back on, retaining staff, all of that headache. And
yeah.
Just burn out anyway.
And having people that you can trust. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, this is true.
Oh, yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, it was kind of a harbinger. I'm looking back now. I was like, yeah, that was a freaking godsend because I could be in that mess right now and losing my mind. So. Things deliver you where you need to be sometimes, and I'm counting my lucky stars right now that I ended up squarely where I'm at. So
I have a lot of friends. Yeah. There's a lot of people right now. I deal with a lot of restaurants in general and places that I'm aligned with. Like I said, I tour a lot. I know people all over the world, especially all around the country, and different restaurants that are chain, but they're not. Like Fogo de Chão, I don't know if you're familiar with them. Yeah. Like I'm very tight with Fogo. It's like I've seen what's going on with people like that. I also know a lot of the mom and pop places, and I see what's going on with a lot of them. It's they're struggling. People where Fogo is putting everybody on furlough.
Yeah,
they're what do you call it? They're just like here locally. They just opened up on Long Island in January. I mean, they just opened here. But I've known that manager, the general manager. I've known him for like 5-6 years. Because he opened up New York City with some of the other guys, and he was in another area. Like I've known him from all around the country. That's what like Fogo is very like. Their people stay, you know, forever. You know, he's been with the company 15 years.
Yeah,
my relationship with them has been just about 10. They're like Long, who's the guy over here. He is doing everything he can to help the community and to stay open and make enough in money. Not for you know, to keep the overhead, but they have to make a certain amount that goes into the medical benefits for the staff. So he's staying open and working, you know, 10 times hard. He's there from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. just to do it. You know, it's him and 3 other people that are working daily. And he's there 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. His wife's pregnant. And he's just doing it to try to keep the medical benefits for everybody that's there.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, it's looking out for your people, and that's guaranteed they'll be there when you need them to come back. Well, yeah, the biggest challenge in that damn business is holding on to people day to day. So this is really going to scatter things. In his benefit right now, it's kind of hard for people to scatter when they're sequestered, but you know, they're already thinking ahead to that. And there are probably a lot of them reconsidering, do I want to jump back into this? Because I don't want to end up in the same boat if it rears its head again. So
yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's with a lot of businesses right now. It's really kind of shifting things. So
it is.
We'll see what the fallout is.
You know, it's funny. Like my partners, like I'll be straight with you. I have no problem being in my studio and doing, you know, at my office, we, you know, it's not like we have 50 employees, you know what I mean? It's a tight unit. And at the end of the day, I have no problem being in because I'm not going anywhere else, you know, and if nobody else is going anywhere else. So I personally think it's stupid to have done the show at home. We all did it at home yesterday rather than being in the studio.
Yeah.
And I think it's stupid because one, we're media, so we're essential.
Yeah.
So we're allowed to be there, you know, especially locally here, we've been voted best radio station in the last 4 years here on Long Island. And that's against all the terrestrial radio stations. So if anybody even stopped us, any of the police or whatever, it's, you know, we're okay.
There's so many non-essential people out there that, you know,
oh yeah,
average person would say, oh, do we really have to have that going on right now, that are still reporting and running business? So we've been pretty lax about it here in the States. I talked with a friend and associate of mine from India.
Yeah.
And they're literally on government issued quarantine where they will be arrested if they're on the street, anything other than legitimately picking up food or medical treatment. So
yeah, it's insane.
If they're off of a certain distance from their property, he said they are jailing people. So
that's crazy.
And it's interesting.
But it makes sense.
Well, you know, they've taken, you know, the extra step to curb the spread. And he said their numbers are coming down fast compared to ours. We're still on the upside of the bloom and who knows where it's going to go.
Where are you located? So,
I am in Greenville, Ohio. I'm not too far.
Okay, so you're not far.
Not too far.
You're right outside. That's right outside of Columbus, right?
Yeah, we're about 2 hours out of Columbus.
Love Columbus. Have you been to Columbus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We get over there all the time. Great town.
Great foodie area also. What do you call it?
Yeah, it is. It's really kind of on the upswing again now. For a while, they kind of had a little dip
right
after that last recession. And, you know, that put a lot of places out and they didn't rebound fast. Kind of most of their growth over the last 10 years shifted out towards suburbs, and they've now kind of put new energy into revitalizing downtown.
Right.
Yeah. You know, right there by the convention center, there's a little district called the Short North, and that's kind of been a rebirth, connecting that and Ohio State University. So
love it.
That's putting a new energy downtown. Along with that, it's been a big boom in the food scene over the last 4 years. So
yeah, I do. When I sign at the convention center over there, I haven't been there in a hot minute because I used to do, I was on the Wizard World tour.
Yeah.
So I would go there and I would go to, what do you call it, right across the way is the market. Oh my God, what is it called again?
North Market. Yeah.
North Market. So North Market, love that place to death. And matter of fact, that's where I found John over at K John's and where I started my sauce and season.
Yeah.
He no longer owns the company. He sold it to Hot Shots, which is a distributor. And
yeah, I saw that when I was digging through the info.
Yeah. And so I haven't worked through him for my sauce and seasoning since they made that purchase. But now I'm bringing everything back through Torchbearer Sauces. They're out of Pennsylvania. But yeah, like that, I mean, that whole thing with what do you call it, with K-John's, I mean, that was just, I mean.
Oh yeah. Everything comes full circle.
It's funny how things work out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I can tell you that story another time.
Okay. I'm going to kind of let you tell your story. You know, that's the whole angle. You dance and I'm going to be your partner. I'm going to follow your lead. You've been all over the map and you were a child actor. You've been in children's books, comic book author, a food critic, a shock jock on the radio and a professional wrestler. And somewhere along the way, you found the time to create your own signature hot sauce. Pardon my pun, but your career is on fire, my friend.
You're too kind. You're too kind. You know, I'm one of those guys, and by the way, that little slip up, Rudio, can also go, it could be a Rudo for, you know, the luchador thing. So you didn't make too much of an error there. Don't worry about it. It's good. It's okay. You know, I've always been that kind of guy who I want to create the things that I wish should be there, you know, that I wish to be. So at the end of the day, I'm also the type of person who has always figured I'm not going to let anybody tell me what I can or can't do. And if I want to do it, I'm going to do it. You know, so things that, you know, I've done over the course of my career. It's funny because a lot of people are like, well, why this and that and the next thing? Everything that I do is pretty much intertwined in one way, shape, or form. Everything from the comics to the sauces and seasonings and coffee, everything is kind of attached. I started out, just to go back to the beginning, I started off as a child actor, as you mentioned. I was on Sesame Street and Romper Room and so forth. You know, but my parents were in the midst of being divorced, and there was a tug of war, and I was there to be a child actor. That's kind of what was going to happen at a young age, but they kind of just couldn't get it together. There was too much of a headbutting thing going on, and that kind of took a side seat. So, you know, I had the bug when I was young, and then I became a regular kid. So that being said, I was very into comic books. I was very into music, but comics was like my thing when I was younger. I was introduced to them by my friend Aaron Haber, whose father, Larry Haber, used to bring him these ridiculous amounts of comics. And you'd go to their house, and in his room would be like racks and racks of all the comics, old, new, everything in between. Downstairs, the basement used to be filled with video games and arcades. And so it was all stuff that kind of inspired me when I was really little. And I haven't necessarily discussed that in many interviews because we haven't really gone back to the beginning. So the fact of the matter is that really kind of set the spark for the comic book bug. And I wanted to be a comic book artist for a long time. I would sit, I would draw, I'd come up with characters. I wanted to be a superhero. And which again, remember where I'm going with this. So I wanted to be a superhero. And you know, there were so many things that I wanted to do with that. But I wound up finding my first true love, which was music. So I kind of fell in love with drumming, and I kind of put the comics and art and everything on the side, and still loved comics and read them. But, you know, now I wanted to be a cool musician. I, you know, grew out my hair, toured with music, you know, did my thing. I went to school for music, and I didn't graduate. I played, and I went on tour, and I did my thing there. I was drumming for a long time, for many, many years. And then I wound up getting sick of being in a five-way marriage. And I wound up, which is pretty much what it is. And mind you, I did all the marketing and so forth for that. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Just following the muse.
There you go.
I have a path in that too, where I got involved with, a music background myself, more of a dabbler. My grandfather was a touring country and Western musician, and it's in my blood. You know, along with, he was also a radio DJ. So I think a little that seeped in somewhere there too. Yeah. Long story short, I had friends who kind of coaxed me into helping out, you know, the marketing and the whole packaging with my artistic background. I've got a background in brand development and illustration design, and got kind of suckered into that whole route. For about 8 years, I was working for independent artists, helping them build careers and guiding them toward becoming a successful, profitable musician as a business.
Wow. Very good.
So I did that for a number of years and got drawn in, got working with some fairly well-known acts along the way, along with those smaller acts that were just getting signed. I'm not going to name drop here. You know, got involved with that a little bit and got into actually working with some signed artists and did that for about 6 or 8 years. It's like totally relate. You know, I got sucked into that, following the muse into that wicked path of wandering into the woods of the music industry.
Oh, yeah. The wonderfully wicked world of the music industry, as is the pro wrestling industry and the comic industry and the foodie industry and everything else in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all got its dark side, right? And we're all struggling to find the light.
Well, you know, it's funny because one thing that I've noticed over the course of the years where I'm kind of in a bunch of different neighborhoods, so to speak, in terms of music and wrestling and food and comics and radio and broad, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's the same field, different manure. Or I'm sorry, different field, same manure. That's what it is. Different field, same manure.
Different fields, same manure. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You know, we're all dealing with the same ups and downs, right?
Same manure. It's all the same. It's just, you know, a different group of people, the chili heads and the this ones and the that. I mean, it's all relative. We're, you know, in the music industry, my biggest issue is I wanted to succeed. I wanted to continue to grow and build and make money. The idiots that I was playing with at the end of the day wanted to tour around in a broken down jalopy and F the people. And yeah, like, no, I'm here to make it happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I can relate. No.
So, you know, I got sick of that. I used to love pro wrestling and I had the opportunity to get into professional wrestling and I wound up getting in and there came the whole quote unquote superhero. So I went back to my roots, loving comic books, then I created this Brimstone character, which has become me, yeah. You know, and in general. So outside of wrestling and comics and so forth, I am known as Brimstone. Sure. And I'm cool with that. It's, no, I'm not a guy from hell. I'm Jewish. We don't believe in hell. It's a gimmick, people. I'm a nice guy. Do I have the persona? Yes, but I'm also fun and foolish and I joke around and I have a good time with people and I smile. I'm not always angry and pissed off all the time. That's not my thing. But at the end of the day, you know, getting into pro wrestling gave me an opportunity to focus not on a group of people, it gave me the opportunity to focus on myself and my brand and continue to build my brand. Even though I wound up being with factions and so forth, and I toured with my tag partner and so forth, I would be out there and I'd market and I'd do things and get interviews and make things happen. Some people are jealous of that. So people don't like that because you're moving forward and they're not. So, you know, that's where hate comes in. And remember I said same manure in a different field? It's the same everywhere. Yeah. Whether you're in podcasting, whether you're on television, whether you're doing whatever it is that you're doing, there are always going to be people that are jealous because they're going to try to dull your shine. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, these people, if they would just put the effort instead of talking smack about people, all right, like you and I and others out there, essentially they could be doing the same thing themselves and they could be successful.
Sure.
There's no reason they can't be just as successful. So fact is, moving forward, I went back and I you know, created the Brimstone character, the Brimstone gimmick. I had a whole backstory. Towards the tail end of my career in pro wrestling, I said, I don't want to be in the ring until I'm 50, 60 years old. I want to be able to continue to build the brand, but, you know, take it out of the ring, because I'm always going to be Brim. I'm always going to be Brimstone. But how do I take it and expand upon that? So I spoke with my buddy, Marcello Carnevale, who is a writer by trade. I said, what would you think about doing a comic? And he goes, really? Love the idea. So the two of us sat down for what's supposed to be like an hour cup of coffee at a diner. And it wound up being like a 5-hour writing session that we came up with the entire idea of Brimstone and the Borderhounds, which is a comic book. So again, this is all intertwined. Now the comic book, and again, I'm talking about building the full brand here. I know it can seem kind of jumpy, but this is kind of the steps that happened to make the end goal here.
It's the evolution.
So, you know, we sat down, we created the Bible of Brimstone and Borderhounds, the comic book, which was based on what I built in the pro wrestling world. Brimstone's not a wrestler in the book, but we created what the character, the gimmick was in the ring and flipped it into what if this was actuality in the comic. Nothing to do with wrestling whatsoever. A couple of things here and there, like our artist, Sajjad Shah, he would always throw in little nooks and crannies, like when Brim was sitting and fighting, he'd throw in my finishing move here and there and like different things that I would do in the ring, you know, again, quote unquote, superhero. So again, that was tied in. Now, mind you, at this point, I'm out of the wrestling ring. I'm into the comic world. And now I'm touring, promoting comics. Now I said, now again, you'll see how this all ties together.
Sure.
And you and I, before we went live, we were talking foodie and food and North Market and all that jazz. So if you guys are not familiar with North Market, Ohio, fantastic place. If you're a foodie, must be there. Anyway, so the next step, my thing is, I always want that next natural progression. I always want to continuously move forward. And what's the next natural progression? So since I was on tour at the time, and we're still very good friends, Eitan Wish was my director of operations for Hound Comics, because we built Hound Comics. I'm not going to get into that whole thing of why we built that and how and so forth, because it will just take forever. Just giving you footnotes here. I said to him, I go, well, if I'm going to be out promoting Hound Comics and Border Hounds books and anything else that we're doing, I go, well, I don't want to be stuck in planes, trains, and automobiles and inside of convention centers and hotels and never get to see where I'm going. So he's like, well, what do you want to do? I go, well, I like to eat. Yes. I know about food. I like to eat food. I like to talk about food. I could talk forever. Let's do a series. So we put together a series called Food Hound Tidbits that ran for about 3 seasons online. We did basically from the convention floor to the convention circuit to mom and pop hot dog shops all the way to 5-star restaurants all around the country, places that not only would you necessarily have heard about, but think places that you should know about when you go into different areas.
Yeah.
So this way I was able to kind of get around. Now, obviously, the next natural progression to doing the food series is creating product. Okay. Now back to that North Market, what do you call it? Ohio. I was signing in Columbus at Wizard World Conventions. I shot across the way during a break to get some stuff, clear my head, relax a little bit. And I came across Cajon's Fiery Foods. They had a little thing there. Now, one of my close friends is Bumblefoot, who was with Guns N' Roses. Now, Ron Thal, for those who don't know his name, Bumblefoot.
Yeah.
Ron is, he is a chili head to the extreme. He loves ultra hot food. So during his travels, he'd always be looking for the hottest thing. So what better than while I'm on tour, I said, well, I'll find you something that's even hotter. I will make it happen. We go back and forth. And every time I go somewhere, I call him up and be like, so Ron, how hot do you go again? What's this on the Scoville scale? You know, like, so I was like, you know, trying to figure it out. I spoke to them over at Cajon's. I said, do you know what the hottest is that you have? They said, well, we don't know what the hottest thing is, but Cajon himself would probably know what the hottest thing would be. So I was like, okay, let's talk to Cajon. Sure enough, I got on the phone with John Hart over at Cajon's Fiery Foods. I said, I don't know if you're familiar with who I am. And he goes, no, I know who you are. And I mentioned about Bumblefoot. He goes, I know who Bumblefoot is. I said, well, that's fantastic. And I said to him, I go, well, you know, do you think you have something super hot? He goes, I guarantee you that I have something that's hotter than he's ever had. I go, fair enough, game on. And then I said, I do this food series and, you know, I've wanted to do this and Ron's always wanted to do his own hot sauce. Would you be interested in maybe doing some kind of a collab or a co-packing or something deal and help us get these started? So he said, sure. So what did I do? Ron and I went out. We went for about 3 days with Cajon's. We sat like mad scientists coming up with all these sauces and seasonings of our own. And we designed them and came up with them and the whole nine. Now, at that time, the comic book was blowing up. We were the first and only independently owned and operated comic that was sold in Borders Books. And then when Borders was going out of business, we pulled everything from Borders Books. And we were the only independently owned and operated comic that was in Barnes & Noble all across the nation. Not because it was making money like that, but it was, you had to show how big your thing is. You have to play the game. So that was, while that was going on, I said, well, I need a way to market all the sauce and seasoning. So what I did was I took the sauces and the seasoning, and inside the comic book, Brimstone and his crew of Border Hounds and the other Border Hound units, without getting into the comic too much, they all hang out in a place called Heaven, which is based in Hell. So, you know, complete with a stairway. Get it? Stairway to Heaven. So stairway, Heaven's a bar and grill that all the Border Hounds go to in the middle of Hell. Hell, by the way, is, Hell is not hell that you expected what it is. Hell is a competing corporation buying for the hottest commodity, which is the soul. And that's, again, it goes into this complete story. I'm not going to go there. Anybody wants to see if they can find it. But at the end of the day, inside the comic book, now you had things called, what do you call it, sweet heat treat wings, and what do you call it, flavor behavior this, or, you know, and I have my candy lines, the candy, you know, grub munchies or whatever. So now, if you were fans of the comic, you'd be able to pick up the sauce and seasoning in real life and utilize it.
Yes.
If you were just fans of the sauce and seasoning, you figure out, oh my God, it's attached to the comic. You know, they'll read the comic. You don't even have to know who Brimstone is, but the Brimstone name is across everything. Everything is old Brimstone and this, that, next thing. Awesome sauce and so forth like that. Now, mind you, one of the seasonings that was in there and that's used as well in the comic was Grindhouse Burgers. Okay? So you follow me now? Now you see where I'm kind of going in brand.
Following the rainbow here. We're like going down the rabbit hole. It's fascinating to see the process. And, you know, I feel so many people kind of miss that mark on understanding what their vision is, what is their driving purpose, and where they're originating from. So you seem to have that all figured out.
I'm sorry if it's boring the hell out of you. I can imagine how boring it is to hear this. Sometimes it's by accident. No, I'm just kidding. No, I try to set my goals on something and try to move towards it. But I also try to do things that make sense. So I'm Brimstone. I have a great following. People know me all around the world. You know, wonderful. That's fantastic. But there are also millions and billions of people that don't know who I am. And they don't, and as much as I'd love for them to know who I am and follow me and pay attention, you know, to what I'm doing, you're not going to necessarily have that type of an audience. You know, I mean, there are very few people who get that, but I try very hard with my authenticity. I try to keep
It's authentic.
You know, I'm the one
authentic
that does every bit of posting on my social media. I'm the one that's speaking to the people when I'm on there. I'm the one that's making the posts. You know, sometimes they're not so great because I'm the one making the posts. But at the end of the day, I'm the one putting it out there. If I don't look so pretty one day, or if I look okay the next day or whatever, I'm putting it there and I'm being authentic. I'm putting out me and my life and what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the fact is if people don't know who I am, I still want them to be able to see my product and go, "Ooh, I like this," or "This tastes good," or "This sounds good," or "This reads well." They can fall in love with each individual product. But guess what? It all has my brand all over it. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's building a brand and continuously marketing and pushing and promoting. A lot of people think that if you build it, they will come. No, man, it doesn't work that way. If you build it and you're authentic and you continue with it, people will come, but not necessarily in the droves that you're hoping them to come in. You have to be out there.
Yeah, but you got to build it first.
Yeah, you have to build it, spend the time building it, perfect it. Yeah. What do you call it? Grindhouse Radio. When we started, I have relationships with a lot of people, a lot of big business, a lot of small business, all around the world. And before I started with Grindhouse, not even with Grindhouse, before we started selling business to business and dealing with corporate sponsorships and so forth, I wasn't going to take money from anybody until I knew that my numbers were up. I wanted to make sure that what I'm going to sell to people was worthwhile, because the last thing I want is to sell something to somebody that they're not getting what they're paying for. That's just bad business.
Yeah.
Right. And it's my brand. You know what I mean? It's a continuation of my brand.
Sure.
Even though Grindhouse is collective of myself and my co-hosts and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, that's still partially my brand. You got to be very protective over that. And I'm sorry I could go long term, like just talk. So I'm sorry, Jeff. Throwing it back to you.
Sure. We're all here looking at all the different angles, you know, and it's all about the different angles, you know, and you've been down so many different creative avenues. What is your inner guide point? Where do you draw the inspiration to follow the next muse, so to speak, to go down the next new path? What do you guide that by?
A lot of the time is, again, natural progression. You know, what's, you know, with the wrestler thing, what's the natural progression? Wrestlers are, you know, quote unquote, real life superheroes. So what's the next progression? A comic book.
Yes.
So now from the comic book, you know, what do you call it? I'm out. And what's the natural progression? If I'm touring, what can I do? Well, you know, going out to eat, that's one of the things you can do. So doing that, everything kind of falls into place. I mean, like, so some of the things I seek out, like sauce and seasoning line, I always wanted to do that. I always wanted to do a sauce and seasoning line. I was like, but there was no sense for me to do it prior. But now there's a reason for me to do it. The food reviews was a reason for me to do that. Oh, by the way, Torchbearer Sauce has got to put that out there. New collab, and they can be putting out my old sauce and seasoning line as well. So make sure you check them out. That's going to be coming out. But anyway, obviously, after all this madness, the natural progression are things that I look at and say, this makes sense. Let's move here. Other things I say to myself, I've always wanted to do this. I should do it. How do I get there? You know what I mean? How do I say, all right, well, you know, I'm at this point, I need to get to this point. How do I work my way there? So like right now, couple of years, I've been making my way and building myself up in the voiceover community. I have a lot of my very good friends are the people that you hear on every cartoon and animation, anime and all that stuff. And some of the biggest players, video games.
you're taking on another character.
Well, that's the thing. So, yeah. which is really funny because they're Brimstone video games. I get to play myself in a bunch of different video games, yeah. And animation and this, that, and this thing. And it's funny because even though I can do different voices and I can work with it, I'm so typecast in a lot of ways because I'm a playing big guy. But, you know, like, you know, so they're just like, so you want me to get down like this, brother? You know what I mean? And that, like, one of my characters I did for The Weaklings, which is a great animated series on YouTube. They brought me down to play Game Day. And of course, they're like, well, we got Brim. We got to put him in the ring. I did so many different takes for them. So this way they had a choice of whatever they wanted to do. But I was in there. It's like, you know, all right, let's see. Even though my character didn't speak like that, I would do the, like, a Hogan versus Macho Man Randy Savage, like, voice. Ooh, yeah, brother. What you gonna do when Game Day comes running wild over you? You know, and it's just like, so I gave that, and they just loved it. And
sure,
yeah, man. But so voiceover was one of those things that I wanted to do. So doing broadcasting and podcasting and being in front of a microphone for the 40 years that I've been in front of a mic and a camera, you know, the end of the day was, all right, well, voiceover is a natural progression of radio. So, and broadcasting. So I wanted to get involved in that. So what did I do? One of the things that I did was I asked every single one of my friends, and we're talking about, you know, you're talking about people like Sean Schammel, Richard Horvitz, Charles Martinet, Gray Delisle, Greg Sipes, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, different people that if you don't know the names, trust me, especially if you have kids, you know who these people are.
Really?
You're talking about Mario and Luigi, Goku from Dragon Ball Z. Oh my God, Richard Horvitz has done like every character known to man, Gray Delisle.
Sure.
You know, Daphne from Scooby-Doo and a million other characters. So like these are people that, you know, have been in the industry forever and are Phil Lamar. These are friends of mine and good friends that I said, tell me what you think I should do. How should I put this together? How should I work this out? And I put together a 1 minute reel, voice reel, and then I took it and I sent it to every one of them and I go, rip me apart, tell me what I need to do to fix it. And each one of them gave me different feedback. Erica from she's from Pokemon, she gave me a ton of information and advice and so forth, and has put me through to the Pokemon people, whether that happens or not, who knows. But you know, like, everybody's you know, in different directions, were giving me different advice, and most of them were in the same kind of, you know, told me the same things.
Yeah.
So I tweaked and tweaked and tweaked, and everybody was like, it's a great demo. It's a good demo. You know, I would go with it. Except for Schemmel. Sean, I love him to death. I just spoke with him last night for about 2 hours. I love that guy to death. He was one of my close friends. And he says to us, he goes, Brim, I'm going to tell you this, and you got to understand, Sean speaks very quickly and very energetic. He is one of the most energetic people you'll ever meet. And he's a, it's a great track. You did a very good job. You'll get business by it. You'll get work, but it can be better. You got to be better. And I was like, I love you so much, man. So I went back and I made it better because I want you to rip me apart. Because just like the rest of my career, when somebody tries to tear me down, I want to be better.
Sure.
So I'm going to prove to you that I'm going to be bigger and better than what you thought. You know what I'm saying? So sure. That's been, you know, so again, the natural progression to broadcasting was obviously voiceover, and I wanted to do voiceover for many years. So
sure,
that was the move on that. So yes, some of it is stuff that I've calculated, other things because it's come along the way. But you know, when I see something, I go, all right, this makes sense. The comic books, just because I loved comic books, I didn't go, okay, I can become a publisher. I was in before, you know, while I was touring in pro wrestling, I worked for some of the biggest publications in Manhattan and in New York. All right. I worked for the Village Voice when they opened up their Long Island Voice. And this was sales, marketing, and advertising. And then I also did Newsday. I'm sure you've heard of Newsday, where I worked for both of them for many years. When I got my shot for some of the big boys, I was working at Newsday. And that's why I didn't take certain things, because I was making a 6-figure salary working at Newsday. You know, you know what I mean? Like, So I was a pompous piece, you know, back when, you know, which I learned I needed to stop that. But look, to be in entertainment in general, you have to have some sort of an ego, but you have to be careful with how you use it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Again, I'm sorry, I could go off on tangents, but.
No, it's great. That's great. We're hearing the real story.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's like I didn't just figure willy-nilly, oh, I could go into publishing or I know how to sell. I worked and I trained and I learned and, you know, I read books and I did when online became a thing, online things, you know, Zig Ziglar's of the world and you know what I mean?
Yeah, actually, just that first show I did this week was with one of Zig's understudies. It was pretty interesting. I got a little view under the hood there. So it was a cool little insight.
That's very cool. Well, it's funny because, you know, guys like Gary Vee, I'm sure you heard of Gary Vee. He's funny, he's well-spoken.
Yes.
But it was the funniest thing. So Kim Adragna, who's one of my co-hosts on the Grindhouse Radio, one of my partners in the Grindhouse Radio, Inc., the business side. And Kim got on this Gary Vee kick about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And she was posting all these things about Gary Vee. And I'm like, Kim, do you realize this is the same garbage that I've been telling you for the last 4 years? I said, it's the same stuff, just regurgitated. And then I think she looked at it, she's like, yeah. But since we're partners and, you know, there's an age difference there, I'm sure it's easier to hear it from other people sometimes. I love my cast and crew. We're a big family. And they started out, Kim and Steve started out as my interns for Hound Comics. See, natural progression. Now they're my partners for the Grindhouse Radio. Some may call me a leader, some may not. But at the end of the day, I like to lead by example. I work 10 times harder than the next person. And I make sure, you know, that the people that are with me, I'd like to pick them and move them up. Because if you don't have your people close to the same level that you're working at, you're never going to succeed. I've always tried to be a leader. Sometimes people like it, some people don't. I've had a couple of people say to me, you know, because one thing is that, yes, I do lead and I do know that I'm the leader. I don't say it out loud because a lot of the time, at the end of the day, you know, with GHR and this business, we're all equal. Doesn't matter what I've done, where I've been.
So do you find inspiration in that, from that superhero alter ego, that inspiration to kind of be a leader, to step out there?
But, you know, there are a lot of people that are out that have said to me, it just happened, you know, at San Diego Comic-Con, we're signing, we're over it. The IMDb boat, the yacht party. I was hosting something over there with Wendy's and doing some influencer stuff. And I was there with a couple of friends in the industry. I'm not going to name who. And, you know, they said to me, I was invited to go to another party, which was with at the Warner Brothers party. And I said, I declined. I said, you know, I can't, I'm not going to leave my people because they wouldn't be able to get everybody in. They were just, you know, I'd be going in with the other two people. And I was like, I politely declined. I appreciated it. And I was talking to this other, you know, this other celeb about it. And he goes, they do realize you're the leader, right? And you need to show your face and you need to be out there and do whatever you've got to do in order to, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but we're all equal here and so forth and so forth. He goes, but you're the face. He goes, doesn't matter. He goes, as great as everybody is, just like, you know, in the Viewers universe, Kevin Smith is the face. Yes, there are a lot of players. There are a lot of good players and people are popular and people like them and love them. But in Viewers, Kevin is the leader. He goes, in the Grindhouse Radio Hound Comics world, you're the leader, you're the face. People are drawn to you, people know you. You have to show face, you have to do these things. I said, yeah, you know, I guess so. And, you know, lesson learned type of a thing. And even though I've been told I want to keep that balance where nobody feels that I feel like I'm better than them. I might have been there, done that, and I might know better a lot of the time, but This is like a learning experience for everybody. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And what's funny is when I...
Sure. Yeah, sure. You know, it's keeping that balance, keeping humble.
Yeah.
But still stepping into that leader role. You've stepped into positions from a very young age that most people are going to be uncomfortable in. A child actor getting in front of a television. I think as kids, you know, I don't know your perspective, but I would imagine as a kid, that could either be monumentally scary, or as a child, you're just tuned out to that. How was your experience with that?
From the stuff that I remember, because again, I was five, I was really young, and I remember bits and pieces and spots, and I can't even pinpoint the exacts of a lot of the different episodes because we didn't have availability for a lot of things. Like at that point, the VCR had just happened to become a thing. And it was like a ridiculous amount of money. And my grandparents had it.
We weren't even thinking about it back then.
No.
We weren't. Yeah, we were living in the moment.
And exactly. I mean, so, you know, I have some screen pictures like they took with the Polaroid and stuff like that. At the end of the day, like I remember a lot of things. I remember I was nervous, you know, at very first I was nervous, and it wasn't even nervous because I was going to be on TV.
Yeah.
I was nervous because of the positions that I was put in on air. And it was my mother's fault. Rest in peace, Mom. One of the skits that I had to do on one of the occasions was you had to take off your shoes and you threw them in a big pile and they mixed them up.
Yeah.
And then you had to find your shoes, put them on and run off screen. So every one of these flipping kids had Velcro sneakers. I'm the only one that had laces. The only one. And I didn't know how to tie my damn shoe.
They're always throwing Brim the big challenges, right?
I was so upset. Well, it was because my mother was like, you know, she got me laces and it was less expensive at the time. It was, you know, single mother and do what she could to support us. And what do you call it? You know, age old, you know, story. And I've looked, I've tried to find it. I'm pretty sure I know which one it is, but in order to get it, you have to pay an extraordinary amount of money to Sesame Street to spend the actual thing, which is why I was like, if I'm wrong on the certain episodes, I'm not going to get it. But I mean, you know, if you watch every single episode,
I'm going to have to try to dig up that episode somewhere.
Find it.
Yeah.
So everybody runs off the screen. Everybody runs off the screen. And here's little me. Yeah. And I'm sitting and I finally found my second shoe and I can't tie my laces. So Maria, God bless her soul.
I'm a sleuth. You know, I like a big challenge when it comes to the research department. And I'm kind of sick about it. I'm going to try to dig that up.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have it. No.
Yeah. See, I'm going to have to do the math here. I'm gonna do the math, and you're 45 and you were 5 at the time, and it was when Sesame Street was airing. I'm not gonna ask you what time that was, what date and frame that was. I'm gonna make that part of the challenge and dig that up.
I'm pretty sure I have the episode date and everything. It's just finding the actual episode.
The actual footage.
Yes, the footage.
That would be interesting.
I have the episode, but I can't find the episode. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't have everything available. So that being said, so Maria, God bless her soul, helped tie my shoelaces.
Yeah.
And I was the last one to run off screen like an ass. I got to work with Carol Spinney, who, again, you know, if people don't know, it was Big Bird and Oscar.
Awesome.
And what's fantastic is I've been in the convention circuit for a long time, where I sign at a lot of the conventions, and I get to meet and greet with fans. But I also get to meet and greet with a lot of different names and people that are in other areas of the industry. One of the events that I love doing every year is the Great Philadelphia Comic Con, which is always a wonderful show. And Chris, who is the promoter, said to me, goes, one year, he goes, Brim, I got a surprise for you. He goes, I got something very special. I need you to host celeb guest host of a panel, but I'm not going to tell you what the panel is, because he knows me. Every once in a while, like, usually it's with friends of mine. Yeah. So I'll do Walking Dead panels with friends of mine from Walking Dead, or, you know, what do you call it? Like Star Trek. I did for him, for George Takei. I went in and I got people moving for him, and, you know, like, still they'll always call me in to do some extra stuff because they know I don't mind doing it. So I got there, we set it up, and he says to me 5 minutes before we go in, I'm like, I need to know a little something so I'm not going in completely blind. He goes, you'll have all the answers. Trust me. I go, okay. It wound up being a PBS. It was a PBS panel, and it was myself, Carol, Spinney.
Oh, wow.
So the first time Carol and I had seen each other in, what, 35, 40 years, you know what I mean? Something like that. And
so did he show up in character? Did he do the
suit? No, he did not. Carol, no worries.
Yeah.
He was starting to really not look so hot at that point. You know, but he was He did a little bit of the voice. He did a little bit of the voice. He did a little grouch. And then the same thing, and Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers, yeah.
So that was, you know, that was a lot of fun.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So years later, you're talking about however many years now, it's the first time I actually did a PBS panel and somebody actually utilized me for that. You know, because it's always, it's funny how they streamline it. I'm like, it's hard sometimes. Here's the issue with doing as many things as I've done.
Sure.
Is people don't realize, one, that I've done so many things, and two, they'll only go and ask you to do or work with you for one specific thing, as opposed to realizing, oh, he can do this, or he's done that, or this, and that. You know what I mean? So that's the challenge that I come across a lot. Yeah.
Sure. And I think that's a challenge for all of us, is people don't always recognize what kind of inner abilities we have under the surface a lot of times.
Absolutely. So that was a cool thing, you know, getting to reunite with Carol. We've been friends for the last couple of years before his passing. You know, the last couple of years before this whole, you know, virus hit, I mean, it's been a crazy few years. And being the fact that the older we get, the more things that are taken away from us, meaning the more people are taken away from us. But being in the industry that I'm in and knowing as many people as I know, I mean, I don't know if you're aware, I was a celebrity, I still am the celebrity spokesperson for the Stan Lee Foundation. Stan was a friend of mine, you know, Stan was a friend. Yeah. In 1 year, I lost my mother. I lost Stan. I lost Peter Mayhew. Chewbacca from Star Wars is a good friend of mine. I'm in his documentary, Mini-Me with Bern Troyer.
Yeah.
I mean, Adam West. Like all these people that I've toured with, that I know, that, you know, my uncle-in-law. I mean, it was like family, friends. Like it was one of these crazy things. But it's hard sometimes to continue moving forward
when
you
have
so much hitting you all at once. One thing that I urge everybody, that, you know, during this whole outbreak, because now people are losing people now during this entire pandemic. And what I urge people to do is, if you're home, I know you're scared. I know you're nervous. I know you're afraid. You don't know what the future is to come. You might be losing people. You might have people that are getting sick.
Yeah.
You have to continue to move forward. You can't stop and just wait. You have to be proactive. I urge everybody to be proactive. If there's something that you wanted to do, or you ever wanted to give a shot, if you wanted to write, you wanted to write music, you wanted to start a YouTube channel, it's the time right now. Start a podcast, whatever it is.
Yes.
You know, this is the time. This is the opportunity. You know what I mean? To get that moving.
Now's the prime time.
Utilize it as a kickstart.
Yeah.
For the people that are older in your life, or old friends, or, you know, give them a call, see how they're doing. You know what I mean? One of the things that killed me, I mean, you know, as people that I was supposed to see, or I was meaning to call, happened with China, Joni Laura from WWE.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen Joni and she was supposed to meet with me, what do you call it, over at Kamikaze in LA when Stan was still a part owner in it, and or not an owner per se, but he had a piece of it. And what do you call it?
Yeah,
I said, China, I said, come out, come sit with me. I know you're not booked, but I'll make space at my area for you. We'll share the space. And she was such a recluse, and she had her own things going on. So she wound up not coming out. And then I hadn't spoken to her, and I meant to call her just to follow up and see how she was doing. And then, you know, she was gone before I even had a chance. So during this time of unsure, being unsure and things going on, reach out to the people. Make sure that you give them the time and say, hey, things are slow right now. I wanted to check on you and see how you're doing and how you're holding up. That's the bit of advice that I can give. I'm sorry to take it to a down note for a minute, but
yeah. No, we got to keep moving forward. No, that's life's about the ups and downs. And, you know, unfortunately, this can potentially be a down for a lot of us. It's a huge downer in a lot of ways, if you look at it that way. But, you know, it's all about looking up, you know, it's about looking up and flipping that coin.
You have to find the silver lining or the light inside, so to speak, you know, and go to that and find a way to, you know, kind of make it work for you.
So you've had to develop quite a few different characters, or mainly one large character throughout the whole stream of your career and life, you know, as an actor, as a pro wrestler, and now as a radio personality. How do you balance that between being Brimstone and Will, the guy from Long Island.
Basically, Brimstone and Will are synonymous with each other. People don't know me as Will. A lot of people, even old friends that I grew up with or I'd worked with at one point or I had been inside, they all know me as Brim. I'm always billed as Brim or under Brimstone. At the end of the day, you know, how do I differentiate? You know, Brimstone has become less of that quote unquote character and more of Will. You know what I'm saying? And Will has become more of Brimstone. You know what I mean? So there is a fine line. Like I think that the better way to kind of put it is,
yes,
where do I draw the line between being Will and Brimstone and then being daddy or husband? You know what I mean? That's where it's different.
Yeah. It's finding that work-life balance.
Yeah. I try, and it's funny because, you know, my wife and my kids call me on everything. You know what I mean? They call me on everything and they'll laugh at me and they'll joke about it. They keep me humble. So, you know, at the end of the day, Will has become Brim, and even just in business. I mean, not only in entertainment, when I walk into a boardroom, and I'm Brimstone. I'm Brim. And, you know, it's funny sometimes because I'll be in there with a bunch of executives and everybody is to the nine. Now, don't get me wrong. I can do Brooks Brothers and I clean up very nicely. You know what I mean? Matter of fact, I work with Brooks Brothers. They did some of my clothes for red carpets years ago.
Really?
Yeah, years ago. I have to recall it. I've worked with a lot of different brands.
You're always the master of work in an angle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, wrestling is work in the angle. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I've got normally, obviously, I'm here. I'm quarantining. I don't have all my rings on and everything now. But I normally, you know, when I go out to the supermarket, I'm still wearing all my rings. When I go out to do an interview, I'm still wearing all my rings. My hair is down or up or back or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'll walk in just like this to, you know, a meeting. And the fact is I know what I'm talking about, and I can speak intelligently, you know, or at least intelligently enough to get my point across. I know my stuff when I'm sitting and talking to these executives that they can appreciate the fact that, you know, hey, he's been there, he's done that. If you read, you know, that's why I like to send my bio out, not because I'm like, look what I've done. That doesn't even have half of the stuff that I've done on it. You know what I'm saying? Like that has mostly my entertainment stuff. That has nothing to do with any of my professional stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Of all the things that I've done, and you, it would blow your mind. And I'm not saying that to toot my horn. It's just, there's a reason that I've gotten to the place that I am. And there's a reason that when I walk into a boardroom, you know, I don't look for respect. I demand the respect, you know? So if you can't deal with the fact that I'm coming in with a big beard and long hair and rings and so forth, then we just don't have to do business. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Hey man, it's got my products in Walmart. I work with some of the best companies out there. I have some amazing sponsors.
It's for so many amazing experiences. You are just genuinely a humble, genuinely kind-hearted, likable guy.
I appreciate it. You're too kind. You either love me or you hate me. It's one or the other. You know, finding people need to. There's such a cookie cutter image that people think.
Yeah.
Is what is, you know, well, this is what sells, or this is what we want, you know, representing our company or whatever. You know, what's funny is that I've had so many offers, you know, even looking the way I do, to work for major corporations and, you know, do different things. And I'm like, well, why would I want to do that? You know, I could do it myself. For me, I do all right. I do, you know, we make money, I make money. But at the end of the day, it's not about the money for me, you know what I mean? As much as it is being able to do my own thing the way I want to do it, or the way my partners and I decide we're going to do it, being able to work on my own brand. I am my own business. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I could do whatever the hell I want to do.
You're the captain of the ship.
And you know, like, I've got, it's my own brand. And if I screw up, I'm only hurting myself. You know, I try, man. I try. And I always try to be a good person. On top of everything else, I do more charity work than anybody that I know.
Yeah, you're like in the epicenter of where everything is blowing up right now. And you know, it's a challenge. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that kind of percolating under the surface. I think as we're able to get out a little more or able to assimilate it, you know, this was kind of a fast and heavy thing. But I think we're just like at the front of it, you know, and I think we're seeing more people figuring out ways to mobilize without actually having to contact. So, you know, like we'll see more of that pop up. You know, it's been what, about a 2-week time frame of something that is kind of the total new ball game for us. So I think we're making a step in the right direction. For the most part, I think it's been the big kind of bump that we've needed as a society, not just here, you know, in the United States, but as a global community. I think it's been a bump to kind of push us all back together a little bit, or toward a new together we've never seen. So, you know, hopefully that plays out, you know, and that's one has to hope. Yeah, I'm going to jump here a little bit. You've played a comic book superhero and a bigger than life figure in both the wrestling world and as a public figure or public celebrity. What do you feel is your big hero's journey in life? And what is your big mission dream you want to fulfill yet in this life?
So you're talking about in terms of in general or as the character?
What moves Will forward? What do you hope to accomplish while you're here on this earth? You know, what's your big picture?
I'm looking to continuously build and grow my legacy. I want to make sure that when I'm gone, you know, my legacy will live on, whether that be in books, in film, and this and that, the next thing. I want people to remember me not only in that, but hopefully as a good person and somebody that likes to give back and to contribute. A big thing for me is I want to make sure that not just now, but eventually I would like to make sure that my entire family is set up and their families are set up and their families are set up for the future. So if I can build the basics, you know, now and create that legacy and develop it and then have the opportunity for, you know, that to continue to grow even well after I'm gone. Because remember, even though the character is based on me and so forth, it's not me per se. So it can live on well after I'm gone. But hopefully that'll help take care of my family as well. I just want my family to be in a good position, you know?
Well, you're on the right path, my friend. You are on the right path. Your light definitely shines and you're definitely a force to be reckoned with in this world. And
thank you.
I'm grateful we've had this opportunity to sit down and talk. You know, I've learned and watched, and you're such an inspiration. So,
oh, you're too kind.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me. It was an honor and a privilege. Like I said, great show, great time chatting with you.
Thanks.
So easy to check out. We got to speak, you know, we probably spoke for about 45 minutes before we even went on. So, you know, I'm sure this is a friendship that'll continue to develop.
Yes, and, sir, my friend. And I'm so grateful
Very good to be here, my friend.
Where can we find, you know, you've mentioned the hot sauce. Where can we find the hot sauce? Because I got to try that out. And also, what else are you passionate about right now that you want our listeners to hear about?
Okay. The sauce and seasoning, obviously during this whole pandemic, we're not, nothing's happening. I have a new sauce that's coming out with my friends over at Torchbearer Sauces. So you can look up Torchbearer Sauces online. They're out of Pennsylvania. We're going to be doing the collab sauce that I went out just literally about a week and a half before this whole thing hit.
Yeah.
My son Dylan and I went out to Pennsylvania and he helped me put it together with them. We were sitting and tasting and playing mad scientist. And we put together, it's a sauce that's called the Torched Stone Thai.
Oh,
so
man.
That one's going to be coming out shortly. And then they're also working on everything to become the new co-packers for my sauce and seasoning line. So whenever that happens, you'll be able to find it either on torchbearersauces.com or you can go to any of my social media. I'm very, very on it on my Instagram. So if you check out Instagram, it's at the real brimstone. I'm verified there. You'll know it's me. Facebook, I see it. I'm just not on it as often, but that's, you know, facebook.com/brimstone. Again, it's verified there. The only one I'm not verified on is Twitter because they hate me for some reason at entrance to hell there, which is also entrance2hell.com is my official site, but it has not been updated. Your best bet for right now is to visit me on Instagram at The Real Brimstone. You'll see everything current that I'm doing. What am I passionate about right now? Oh, so, and that's where you'll be able to find where the sauce is.
Right on.
What am I passionate about now? I'm still passionate about my family. Still love my wife, which we just celebrated 18 years together. And I am passionate about, you know, the Grindhouse Radio and everything we're doing there. We're really trying to continue to build and grow and, you know, teach and learn and just continue to discover what's next. Really, really passionate about finding what's next because that's what gets me going. I enjoy something new, something that can give you a little bit more of a spark. It's like, all right, oh, this is new and let me kind of jump over to this for a little bit and let's move on this.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, that's what we did in time. But, anyway, yeah.
That spark starts the fire, right? Well, how long was that? Are we going to have to get rights on that?
No. It was like 2 seconds. It was 2 seconds. And actually, That could go under, what do you call it? Not comedy.
Fair usage.
No. Yeah. I forgot the word for it. It'll come to me. It's just because I'm in the middle of it right now. And
yeah.
It's my blonde moment. What do you call it? With an S. Yeah. It's a, what do you call it? It's with an S. I can't believe I just blanked out.
I should know all this crap because I've had to deal with it both as a restaurateur and you know, managing other artists, and it's not coming to me right now either.
What do you call it? It's a spoof.
Yeah.
Spoof. There you go.
Spoof. It's a spoof of it.
It's like Mad.
Yeah.
Why do you think Mad Magazine and Cracked are able to get away with everything they get away with?
Well, thank you, man. This has not been a spoof. This has definitely been a great conversation and I've enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you. Thank you wholeheartedly for blessing us and being on this show today.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. And we will see you all soon. And again, thanks for having me, brother.
We'll see you soon too, my friend. Thank you. We want to thank you for joining us today. This episode was brought to you by the letter B and the number 7. Be sure to join us next episode and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Light Inside. If you've enjoyed today's show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review for all of your friends. This has been The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker, signing off.